is to honor the stories and emotions of many while preserving the anonymity of all. Introduction. Why do I always think people are mad at me? I ask my therapist. It's our first session together on a sticky hot day in New York City. Her sage green office is tucked between Union Square and Chelsea, and the shrill sound of passing sirens drifts into the room like a breeze. I'm 20 years old, interning at a lifestyle magazine for the summer in between my sophomore and junior years of college. I've saved up enough money to afford 5 to 7 sessions with her over the summer, so I say a silent prayer to no one that she'll fix me up quickly. In response to my initial question, she nods slowly and breathes deeply, waiting for me to say more while I wait for her to say anything. She adjusts her rectangular red-framed glasses and recrosses her legs, and my gaze settles on the painting above her chair. I squint my eyes and tilt my head as I try to decide whether it's a painting of a flower or a vagina. At the end of our 50 minutes together, after providing her with some background on my life thus far, I walk out of her office with tear-stained cheeks and a recommendation for a book on adult daughters of an alcoholic parent. Weird, but okay. I had hoped that said therapist would tell me what was, quote, wrong with me and provide me with a 3-step solution, a goodie bag, and a 2.0 version of myself. Instead, she spent most of the session asking me about my childhood, and in our subsequent sessions together, I was gently brought to the realization that while I was no longer living at home, in some ways, it felt like I was still there. I was no longer anticipating my dad's mood swings, but I was now anticipating getting fired anytime my boss messaged me. I was no longer analyzing the cadence of my dad's speech to see if he had been drinking, but I was now analyzing what it could mean when my friend texted me with a period at the end of the sentence instead of an exclamation point. I no longer needed to be, quote, perfect and good to keep the peace at home, but I realized that I still felt terrified to be seen as anything but perfect and good now. This hypervigilance, this unconscious sense of constantly being on high alert, on guard, was the thread weaving through both my childhood and my adulthood. It was during this summer that I finally understood that my present-day fears were not just phobias to overcome. In fact, they served a crucial purpose. They had kept my past self safe. What I viewed as self-sabotage had been self-protection. After that summer, I was confronted with the understanding that perhaps healing isn't a checkbox item, but an uncomfortable, messy process of looking inward. Huh. But I was motivated. If there was one thing I was sure of, it was that I didn't want to live in a state of deep fear anymore. I felt like I was split in two, the younger part of me that was living in fear, and the wiser, parent part of me that knew a better, more peaceful existence was possible. I just didn't know where to start. So many people, especially women, struggle constantly with the notion that people are mad at them. We fearfully say, "Are you mad at me?" to our partners when they're in a bad mood, to our best friends when they don't text back, to our colleagues who didn't say hi to us when we passed each other walking out of the bathroom. Or maybe we don't ask and instead just silently ruminate about it when we're in the shower until our hands are pruny, and when we're lying alert in bed at 1 a.m., chest tight, until we're too exhausted to think about it anymore. Today, it may seem odd that we worry so much about how others perceive us, given that we're in constant communication with one another. But it's precisely because of this endless receiving and giving of external validation and reassurance, texting, hearting others' texts, liking their posts, FaceTiming, DMing videos, that we are sent into tailspins of insecurity. When our bodies are so used to that intense amount of communication, and then it's reduced in any way, this can easily send the part of ourselves that is focused on survival into a spiral. There are so many ways to tell someone you're thinking of them, and because of that, there are also so many opportunities to feel forgotten. When I went back to school that fall, I got a pretty bad concussion after a drunk guy at a Halloween party fell against me, knocking his forehead into mine with an almost impressive amount of momentum. Doctor's orders were to take time off from classes, not look at screens, and rest in the darkness as much as